And so everybody understands our format this morning. The senator and I will visit. I'll ask a few questions, but we will be taking questions from the audience. And Tammy will have a microphone. If you want to ask a question, please raise your hand. We want to make sure your question is in the microphone so we can make sure we get you in the audio for television and radio that are covering this today. So first off, good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Ron. Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
It's great to be here. And I would just say thanks. I would say, first of all, happy Father's Day to the fathers who are out in the crowd. And yes. And secondly, I just want to thank the Montana broadcasters for allowing me to be up here with you. Thank you.
Well, and you and I usually do this about once a month, so we probably should turn our chairs around so we don't see the audience like when we're on radio.
Yeah, correct.
You're exactly good at that?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
We both have faces for radio, so we're in trouble.
Hey, easy. Easy.
Sorry, I guess I should exclude you.
No, it's fine. Quit pointing out the obvious, though.
Well, you're Montana's senior senator, and after two terms in the United States Senate and two races that were very heated, very close races, here you are running for your third term with another, looks like, heated race thanks to outside monies. What's your take on that?
Well, the outside money point or the point of the heated race?
I would just
tell you this. I think people talk about democracies. We have a democracy in this country that works and it works well, and the reason it works and works well and has in the past is because the people have an opportunity to make their voices heard. Now, I don't need to tell a guy from Butte that over 100 years ago that wasn't the case when the Copper Kings were buying elections and pumping a lot of money into politics and drowning out regular people's votes. Montanans stood up and said, "Enough of this," and that held for 100 years. That initiative that the people of Montana passed, and then a few years back, I think it was before the 2010 race, the Supreme Court made a decision on Citizens United that I do not believe was a good decision for our democracy, not for Democrats, not for Republicans, but for our democracy, because we are seeing incredible amounts of money flow into these races by people who have no connection to Montana whatsoever, wouldn't be able to pick out Butte or Big Sandy on a map, but are doing it to be able to buy political influence. And I think it's a big problem. And we're seeing Montana, and have the last two cycles that I've been involved in, more the 2012 and now this one, we're seeing just floods of dollars come in. Now let me give you an example, and I've used this example a lot to some of you, so you've heard it, but the election in 2006 before Citizens United was plenty expensive. It was about $25 million between Burns and I. That's how much was spent in that race. In 2012, it was north of $50 million. We'll see what this one is. But it doubled in 6 years. And I am not sure that when the voters went to the polls, they were any better informed than before Citizens United. In fact, it could be argued they were less informed. But that aside, we are on the landscape we're on. It is the field that we're playing, and we will play on that field until I can vote to have campaign finance reform, which I have done in the past every time.
That leads us to the lack of civility and respect in discussions. Our country's being separated down party lines in a not so positive way. What do you see as changes that can be made to get back to having civil discourse?
Well, I always said you take Montana back to Washington, D.C. This state was built by people working together, and I think you can say that for the country generations ago. I think we need to look at our forefathers and use them as an example to move forward. I can give you plenty of examples. Like on my farm, my grandfather built the barn, but the neighbors really built the barn because neighbors help neighbors. That's how the country was built. We need to learn from that in Washington, D.C. It's one of the reasons I've worked very, very hard to develop relationships with, I'm a ranking member on Veterans Affairs, so Johnny Isaacson's a natural to bring up, the chairman of that committee. And we work together. And I will tell you that I have got Johnny's back and Johnny's got mine. If somebody from my side of the aisle goes after Johnny, we'll take care of that problem. And by the way, Johnny does the same for me. And by the way, if somebody from his own party goes after him, I'll do that too. So the truth is that you have to develop personal relationships, and I think that's a big part of it. Right now, there's not a lot of time to do that, and I think that's a problem. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time going out to dinner with folks from either side of the aisle, and I think there's some opportunity to build relationships by going out to dinner and visiting with folks and talking about their family and finding out where their values and inner priorities are. So I think that's how you do it. The problem is with so much money coming into the campaigns, it really does tend to sour the well a bit.
So with that, the President of the United States demands your resignation.
I picked up on that, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Of course, he's after you for the Randy Jackson questioning. What's your response to him, and what is your take on, you know, did you go after him, or?
Look, I take our constitutional responsibilities in this country very, very important, and the Constitution is clear on what the Senate does in confirmation and vetting. He is the Secretary of the VA. We make promises to our veterans, and I believe we have an obligation to those veterans to make sure we live up to them. You combine those two things, Ronnie Jackson was sitting in my office, nice guy. We continued the vetting process, and we found out some problems. Wasn't sure, so we asked him to answer them, no answer. So we made them public. And quite frankly, then he stepped back. I did my job, and I also saved him a lot of heartache, I believe. And that is that when those folks that are nominated for the position, whether it's Secretary of VA or others, they're put under oath. Every one of the questions that we asked him would have been asked in committee. He'd have been under oath. I think we saved him some problems. And I would just say furthermore, so you guys know here, and I've said it before, but 25 people came forth. They weren't all in the same group. They were all different. They called me. Some were all military. Some were retired. Some were active duty and talked about problems from different angles that they had. This has now resulted through no doings of my own, none whatsoever, because once he was out as Secretary of the VA nominee, we were looking for another person, which we've gotten the name of Bob Wilkie, we think. But the military IG is doing an investigation on him now because he was part of the Navy. I don't know what that's going to bring up, but they don't do that without some cause. So I did my job. The president didn't like the job I did, but the Constitution was clear, and we'll continue to do my job.
Switching gears.
Yes.
Healthcare is becoming mm-hmm. more and more expensive. The healthcare industry, the insurance industry, is asking to be able to raise their rates again. Pharmaceuticals yes. are mm-hmm. making it impossible through these plans for many Montanans to afford the medicines that their doctors
correct.
Prescribing. Is Obamacare broken? Can it be fixed? Or do we need to go a new direction?
Well, I think the bottom line here is, and as I go around the state, you hear that, I mean, I think Montana families and Montana businesses are paying too much for their health care. I mean, that's not breaking news. That's just a fact. And I think what Congress needs to do is we need to put more transparency on prescription drugs. We need to put more transparency into the health insurance business, into the medical business generally, and look for ways to make sure that people have pre-existing conditions can continue to be covered, make sure that people get a serious disease like cancer or heart disease or whatever and has to go to the doctor and then they hit a lifetime cap. That's not acceptable to be in those kind of situations. Instead, what we've done in Washington, D.C., instead of working together, it's repeal, 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 and replaced with the old system, and the old system didn't work that well. I know that because when Sharla and I were in our 20s, we couldn't afford insurance, so we had to make a choice whether we paid the bills or we bought insurance, and we went without insurance, which was fine because we never got sick. We were young, but not everybody's that lucky. I talked to a lady the other day at our Wednesday morning coffee, and she said, my grandson, 16 years old, has got leukemia. And if they don't have pre-existing conditions covered, I'm going to be broke, and my kids are going to be broke, and he's going to be in trouble. So healthcare is a big issue. We need to work to figure out how we can put more accountability to prescription drugs, how we can put more accountability to insurance, how we can get more docs and nurses into the field, because I think it's critically important, especially in a rural state like Montana, and work together. There are payments that are being put out by the federal government right now that help drive down costs that are being held up. That uncertainty also drives up costs. So bottom line is, Ron, what we need to do, and it goes back to your previous question, and actually the question before that, we need to work together, put the politics of this aside, and come up with solutions that actually do drive down costs. And I can tell you that that was the intent of the Affordable Care Act, but it didn't achieve those. So it needed work. It still needs work. But to just say we're going to repeal and take insurance away and add more instability to the system is not the direction to go, and that's what we've done for the last 5 years.
So how do you respond to the people that are saying is what the Obamacare Act or what the Act did was create more strength for the insurance companies? The insurance companies are now controlling what can be prescribed. How do you bring that in?
There's some truth to that, and so there's ways to deal with that. And we can deal with that at the federal level by allowing Medicaid expansion to work. I think that helps. I think by the whole idea behind the bill, Max was one of the chief authors of it, was to create more competition in the marketplace. That didn't happen in Montana. We had three companies that jumped in and the rest didn't. We've got to figure out ways to expand the pools so that more companies can come in. And I think there are some opportunities, and buying across state lines has been one that's been brought up that can happen. The challenge of buying across state lines, you've got to do it right, but those companies that provide, and I'm really getting in the weeds a long ways here, by the way, the companies that provide the insurance, sometimes hospitals don't have agreements with those companies, and so you're buying insurance that doesn't get to where you need to go. We need to figure out those pools, those bigger pools, so that they actually are covered by the hospitals, and I think that will help drive down, and then we need to get more companies in, not less. I think that was the idea between the health co-op, encourage those folks to come in because they'll help drive down costs too. And so we've got a long ways to go, but it does not work the way we've been doing it the last 5-6 years.
Staying with that avenue, let's go to the drug problem in America.
Yes.
I mean, there's not a community in Montana that does not have a drug issue and drug crime issue.
Yep.
What needs to be done, not just the prescription drugs, but the methamphetamines, the other heroin, the items that are coming in from Mexico and South America, what do we need to do? What can we do? And is the wall maybe part of that solution?
Drugs are a huge problem, and they cost a lot of money, and they ruin a lot of lives in Montana and across this country. I will tell you what the U.S. Marshal, Oster Miller, told me when I went in and visited with him 4 or 5 months ago. He said, the ports are where the drugs are coming through. They're not coming through in backpacks in between the ports. They're coming through in cars and trucks on the ports. I'm ranking member on the subcommittee on Homeland Security, and my goal is to make sure we have the technology and the manpower to be able to check those cars and those trucks out coming in. I think that's one spot. Second spot is the one that everybody talks about that's a no-brainer, and that's education. Every time a school group comes in to talk to me, I try to talk to them about just don't get involved in this crap. Just don't do it. And it needs to be something that we stress a lot when kids are growing up, because the bottom line is we all know people who have taken the wrong turn and bad things happen. And so don't put yourself in that position. Life's tough enough without overcomplicating with drugs. But I would just tell you that there's also some law enforcement issues that need to be done. There's some programs out there that I have pushed that allows law enforcement to work together to really help folks, once catch the folks who are the perpetrators, and then treatment on the other side to get them back to a normal life. It's a multifaceted thing between education, stopping at the border, and then making sure we have adequate law enforcement to take care of it.
Switching gears to something of interest to the group of broadcasters that are here today, the Federal Communications Commission, with you being on the Commerce Committee,
yes,
is an area where you spend a lot of time. And on behalf of the broadcasters,
yes,
thank you for bringing Chairman Wheeler to our state.
Yes.
The entire nation asked, what did you guys do to him when he's Montana? Yeah. We didn't tell him about the grizzly we put in his room or anything.
No.
But But the idea that things happened, things changed with the chairman. Now you have Chairman Pai.
Yes.
And he's coming in with a lot of deregulation, a lot of things that he wants to change. Where are you on these issues?
Well, we brought Wheeler to Montana. I brought Wheeler to Montana because I thought it was important that he sees rural America and sees the challenges we have in rural America. And I think he reacted appropriately after seeing those challenges. I think that that was a good trip, and I think we got some benefits out of it, and it was positive. I think the same thing could be said for the folks I serve with, by the way. I don't claim to know what's going on in inner city Miami or Detroit or New York City or any of those places, so I look forward to be educated by those folks, and we can educate them on the challenges we have in rural America, whether it's in broadcast, whether it's in broadband, whether it's in transportation issues, the list goes on and on and on. So that's what we're going to do. The same thing goes with Pai. Pai's made some decisions I've agreed with. Pai's made some decisions I haven't agreed with. And we try to communicate with those different agencies, in this case the FCC, to make sure that they understand the challenges that we have in Montana. And by the way, so you guys know, it's really important that, and we utilized, and I don't want Dewey to get a pay increase for this, but we utilized Dewey a lot. Because we'll talk to Dewey. No, I'm just kidding, Dewey. I do want you to have a pay increase. We talk to Dewey about the challenges, and then he will refer us to different people in the organization, and we will talk to you directly about different issues that come down the pipe. Those conversations sometimes result in a phone call of mine to Pai about, hey, this is what's going on in Montana. This is how you can make this policy better or this rule better. And this is what you need to do to adapt, or it might end up being a letter, or maybe both, a letter and a phone call. So it's just bringing Montana perspective to Washington, D.C. And whether it's Wheeler or whether it's Pai, I think everybody needs that rural perspective.
Again, we will be taking questions from the audience. So if you have a question, if you raise your hand, Tammy would. We have one over here, Tammy, in the front. We'll go ahead and get those questions in. We want to give you the opportunity to ask questions of your senator as well. As we're getting over there, let's go back to the recent issue on school shootings.
Yes.
And I know I was with you in D.C. with Dewey and John, and we just had one of those tragedies.
Yeah.
And so here we are with this accessibility to guns, gun registration issues.
Yep.
Where are you on the gun rights and on the school shooting situations?
Well, I will tell you that Second Amendment is very important to me. As a Montanan, I think most Montanans will tell you that. Our right to keep and bear arms is, quite frankly, part of who I am. I made a living with a gun. I protect my house with a gun. Everybody in this room probably say the same thing, okay? But school shootings, we should not tolerate. When I met with some kids from Helena, and a 16-year-old girl says to me after we talk a little bit, she says, I'm really worried about getting shot in school. I'm going to tell you that is a huge, huge problem. Because if we've got children that are actually thinking about that while they're in the classroom, they're not learning. And we're developing mental health issues at that age, at that moment in time. It's a problem. So the question is, what can be done? And Ron, I'm going to tell you what I think can be done. And it's not going to stop it, but it's going to help. And that is background checks. I do not think that people who are criminals, terrorists, or court adjudicated mentally ill, I believe they've forfeited their Second Amendment rights. And we ought to have a good background check to make sure we keep the guns out of the hands of those folks. And the next question would be, well, what about the straw purchasers? You guys remember the Broadwater policeman who got shot down in the interstate by some cop killers? Those guns were bought by their daughter-in-law for the express purpose of that thing, that job that they did. Those policemen from Butte Silverbow, by the way, were out that did an incredible job and got honored during Police Week about a month ago. But we need to make sure that if there are straw purchasers are illegal, and if in fact they do it anyway, that they're held to the same sort of punishment as the person who committed the crime. I think that's a pretty healthy deterrent. And so that issue, you look, bump stocks, I don't think the first time I heard of them was in Las Vegas, and I don't see why bump stocks are legal at all. We should ban them. But And I think we could get those things done if we brought them to the floor. I think there's bipartisan support for it, but they haven't been brought to the floor yet. I think when you get into the point about banning certain guns, it becomes a much more slippery slope and not nearly as palatable as doing something that I think is fairly common sense, and that is just making sure that law-abiding citizens are the ones that have the access to the weapons. So,
we have a question, Tammy.
Senator Tester, where do you stand on the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy for illegal border crossings that's led to the separation of families at the border?
That's a great question. What grade in school are you? You're in college?
Out of college.
Out of, holy mackerel. That's the second time this has happened to me. I got to tell you this story. I was talking to a lady down in Twin Bridges. She looked like she was in junior high. And by the way, you'd look far older than that. And I said, what year in high school are you? And she said, I've got my master's. I'm 32 years old. I apologize, okay? And you've interviewed me, too. That was really silly of me. So, look, border security, critically important, absolutely critically important. Make sure we have a border that is secure, whether you use wall, manpower, technology, whatever it may be, get the most bang for the buck and secure the border. Being able to make people so they don't want to come across the border, a deterrent is important, too. But a deterrent where you rip kids away from their parents is not acceptable. And I will tell you that we've got to figure out a better way than this. This is not something we should be doing as a nation. There are a number of reasons for it, other than it being just flat the worst thing that you could possibly do. My mother used to drop me off at grade school, and I had to have separation syndrome. I mean, you're talking about pulling kids away from their parents. I can't imagine anything worse. And if these folks are actually here for asylum, so they came with the best of intentions, and I know they all aren't necessarily, but some of them are, and this happens, it's a double wham. So we just got to figure out a better way to deter than that. That's not America.
We have another question, Tammy?
Good morning, Senator. It was incredibly disturbing to read last week that Montana once again is number one in suicide rates per capita around the country. And I know that the NBA is launching on a public service campaign, but I wonder what you think we ought to be doing, what we can do to try to stem that tide.
Well, I mean, I think it goes... It's a big problem. This isn't one we want to be leading the nation in, is suicides. Believe it or not, it goes to workforce. It's a workforce issue. If you live east of Billings, there aren't many psychologists or psychologists that live in that neck of the woods. We need to make sure that we're encouraging young people to get into the business of psychology and psychiatry, of nursing, to be able to let these folks, especially the ones that are isolated in rural areas, have access to healthcare when they need it. This has been a big issue in the VA, massive issue. I mean, the signature injury coming out of the Middle East has been PTSD. And there is also a stigma that revolves around it. So if we can reduce the stigma so that people understand that if you have a mental health problem that you can go get it fixed, just like you get a broken arm fixed, which is, by the way, where we're at in the 21st century, then I think that's what you can do. So the broadcasters can help reduce the stigma around it. How do you do that? You tell stories. You tell stories about people who have had problems that got fixed and now are functioning. A guy in Butte, for example, we were talking about Medicaid expansion. He walked in, and we had a roundtable discussion. He said, you know what? He said, I've had diabetes since I was in high school. Hadn't been able to get it taken care of. He says, I've got mental health issues. Haven't been able to get them taken care of. Medicaid expansion came along. I got my diabetes taken care of. I got to see a psychologist. And he said, now I've got a job and I'm supporting my family And it's the first time in my life I've been able to do it. And then he went, and you guys are talking about taking that away. But the point is this. That's a great story. That's a great story about somebody who understood they had a problem, went and got help, and now was a contributor to society. And I'm going to tell you that coming from a rural state, I think Alaska's number two, by the way. So we've got issues here that we live in areas that we can get isolated. If you don't talk to people, it puts you more at risk. And if you don't have access to folks who know the business and can help you when you need help, when you're in crisis, that's a problem. So I would just talk about folks that have been out there, and then we've got to figure out some way we can educate our kids to get more of them to go into the field of mental health care. I believe it is the biggest issue health-wise we'll face in this country over the next 50 years.
Additional questions? While we're getting over there, I'd like to talk to you about energy. We'll come back with that question. In Montana, of course, the state and the people of the state have benefited from the coal industry and the tax on the coal industry. Yep. And now that's under attack, and the coal industry is being attacked on numerous platforms from shipping and on.
Yep.
Where are you on the Trump administration's decision to require power companies use so much coal or nuclear energy? Do you have a stand on that issue?
Well, I would just tell you this. I think that affordable energy is critical to our economy. If we don't have affordable energy, it really shuts down a lot of opportunity. And I can tell you that ought to be the driver, truthfully. I think that coal still is a big part of our portfolio. I think we need to do research and development. And when I say we, I mean I think the private sector and the public sector needs to throw dollars into R&D because climate change is happening, and we need to figure out a way to lead the world in this solution. And I think if we develop that technology, we can sell it, create more jobs, and we still have cheap energy, which I think is critically important. I'm not sure that I would require folks to, I'm not sure that's a good policy. I'm not sure requiring folks to do things is generally good for democracy, unless public safety is involved. So I think coal can stand on its own, but we need to have R&D to support it.
You have a question?
Morning, Senator. How you doing?
I'm well.
Your boots, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. I want you to have a little fun with this, if you will. You think our president will make it through this term, his term of presidency?
Yes. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Look, there's a lot of things that I've agreed with and disagreed with the president. I've worked with him when I could. I've held him accountable when I needed to. There's some of his Twitters that he puts out that drive me insane. Those are not impeachable offenses. I think that the president will make it through this term. I will tell you that the conversation he had last week with Kim Jong-un, I think, is a positive step forward, very positive. Do I think it denuclearized North Korea? No, but I think it could have the possibility of doing that if we get the right agreement set up. That's a positive thing, okay? The stuff on trade, a little different, especially when you come from an agricultural state like Montana, where we ship our products out of this state and out of this country. I think it's critically important we have those trading relationships, and I thought it was a mistake when we pulled out of TPP, and I was a critic of TPP. I think some of the stuff with currency manipulation need to be dealt with, but if you're not at the table, you can't get your input. And NAFTA, with Canada being our number one trading partner and Mexico importing more barley from Montana and the United States than any other country in the world, I think we're playing with fire agriculturally, and I think we're playing with fire from a food security standpoint. So I don't think that I personally don't see anything that he's done that has, to this point in time, that would say that he wouldn't finish his time in office.
Question from Peter.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
By the way, happy Father's Day to you, too.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm sorry that you're away from your family.
I'm going to see him later today, as
good,
a matter
good,
of fact.
Good, good, excellent.
I'm going to whistle into Helena.
Really quickly, I just wanted to very cordially and respectfully invite you to come join us on our talk show on KGVO. We've invited you for many years. I know that your schedule hasn't permitted it, but we would love to have you. 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever you can spare us, we would love to have. And I'm the boss. So I get to cut people off who are rude, and I do it all the time. So I will not allow that to happen.
You can say that on Father's Day that you're the boss, but I know there's a different boss.
But anyway, I would like to invite you, and we'd appreciate it, because unfortunately, sometimes we have too much of the other side on our station. So thank you.
Peter, thank you. And anytime I can talk to the voice of the Grizzlies, it would be a pleasure. Look, just so you know, I mean, time is my most valuable asset, just like everybody sitting in this room. It's really critical. But we will try to make the time to get there. So thank you for the invite. You bet.
Another question?
Senator, yes. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
I've never met you. My name is John Arneson, and I host Voices of Montana radio show. And I, too, would like to invite you on Voices of Montana. We're on 24 radio stations across the state.
Yeah.
And we, too, sometimes have too much of one side.
Yeah, right.
And you can call in at any time, any place. If I need to record the interview, that would be fine. We would love to have you on the show.
Super.
9 to 10 a.m., Mountain Time. But I do have a question. I do have a question.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I want to talk about sanctuary cities.
Yes.
Where you stand on sanctuary cities, I would like to hear that. Yeah. And also, are you in favor of our coal being shipped out of ports in Washington? And is there anything you can do to help ease that in Longview, Washington?
Yeah.
Seems like the people want it shipped out. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll get to the coal issue in a second. Look, I'm opposed to sanctuary cities. We have none in the state of Montana. There have been several bills that have come up to ban sanctuary cities, but unfortunately they cut funding for law enforcement or economic development for those very same cities. And I think that's a mistake. I think it makes the country less safe, and I am into making the country more safe. And in that process, I think law enforcement does need to work together to get the bad guys and move them forward. But every one of those sanctuary city bills that come down the pipe that we're voting on had a poison pill in them, and I think there was a poison pill in them intentionally so that we could have this conversation. But I believe law enforcement needs to work together, municipality, county, highway patrol, ICE, border protection, the works. From a coal standpoint, in shipping that coal through Bellevue, I believe that's where the port is Longview, that's right. There are some challenges there, and there's some states' rights issues there that becomes an issue. And I will tell you that I'll give you one of them, for example, that puts me in a real bind. I believe in Indian Nation sovereignty. Where that track is going, the Indian country that is there says we don't want it. And I can't even tell you the tribe, but they've said they don't want it. I think it's very tough for me to stick up for sovereignty for tribes in Montana and say sovereignty is important and say, oh, by the way, but that tribe in Washington, it doesn't count. So there's an issue there. But look, I think we have issues in this country around climate change. I've said that. I don't think coal is the only problem. I think we've got a lot of problems that goes around it. And I think that if we're able to get good R&D around all carbon-based fuels, I think it makes them much more marketable and makes them much less controversial.
One more question, then we will wrap it up.
And that happens to be my question? Well, that's a lot of pressure.
let me start off by saying, no, he's not coming on your show. Okay, go ahead.
I don't have a show anymore, so you're off the hook, Senator John. And as every broadcaster knows, cash flow solves a lot of problems. And I look at some of the problems we face in Montana, and some people have lost their way and lost a sense of purpose. That's why they're on drugs, because they don't have a job. And if they are on drugs, then they lose their jobs. So from your perspective, what can Montana do to get some jobs to support the people that are going to pay for my Social Security, which looks like it's ending, like, what, tomorrow?
Great, great question, and I should probably bring Cooney up to answer this question, but I'm not going to do that. Look, I'm going to tell you, there are lots of jobs in Montana that are available that can't be filled that just require a skill set. So what do? We have We have amazing opportunity in this state because we've got a great two-year system of college that doesn't break the bank if you're a student. But we just got to let students know that there is no shame in being a sheetrocker or a plumber or a mechanic. And encourage our kids to head in that direction if that's what they want to do. Some kids are four-year kids, and that's fine. We need those entrepreneurs that are coming out of those four-year schools, but we absolutely need folks to go to the trades to get educated. We also need a vibrant workforce training program in this state, and I have supported both of those things at the federal government. Why? Because we've got guys and gals out there who are plenty capable. They just need the skill set to be able to fill the jobs that are out there. And the last thing I'll tell you that we're not utilizing near enough in this state are our tribal colleges. We've got a tribal college on every reservation. We've got unemployment that's through the roof on every reservation. We need to utilize those tribal colleges to help reduce that unemployment there too, whether it's working with the university system or whether there are standalone programs. We've seen some successes in that. SK, Sailors Kootenai College, has done some stuff with nursing that I think they're starting to make some inroads. I think that's positive. So I would just say this. In this time where unemployment is very, very low, there is still opportunity and a lot of opportunity for folks to get the right skill set and the right training to be able to go out and fill the needs. I'll give you an example. I've got a Frigstad duckfoot that's 30 years old. 2 weeks ago, I'm pulling it out of the field, and one of the brackets that holds one of the pulleys that keeps the thing from going in the ground ripped off, okay? This is not something that John Farmer welder can fix. This is going to take a real welder. I'm going to tell you what, I had a hell of a time finding somebody to come out and weld. I'm going to end up paying a lot of money by the time I got that done, and I don't know what the bill's going to be, but he did a really nice job, so what the hell? You know, we'll pay what it's worth. So there's opportunity out there. There's a lot of opportunity. I think there's more opportunity now than there has been for a long, long time, and not in any other place but right here. And then you'll be able to keep drawing your Social Security and Medicare.
So after this meeting's over, would you please explain to John David that a duck foot is something you use on a farm not something that paddles in water?
Got it. You're right.
We'd appreciate that.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, I know John's over there looking really perplexed. Yes,
exactly.
Right now. So I stayed away from this question until now as we get ready to wrap things up. We were supposed to be sharing the stage today with your opponent, who had verbally committed to numerous members of this association that he would be here if he were elected. But on Monday, he decided not to be here. But then within a half hour of sending that email saying he's declining our offer, he challenges you publicly to 5 debates. Give me your take on this, and where are you if the Montana broadcasters come back and ask you to debate Mr. Rosendale with the broadcasters?
Tell me the time and place. Let me just say this. First of all, I appreciate the fact that you guys do this debate. I appreciate it a lot. I think it's a real opportunity for Montanans to be able to see and hear a debate that they wouldn't normally be able to see or hear. And the reason I say that is because before I was in the state legislature, I remember sitting on my tractor on a Sunday morning listening to the debate. And it was helpful. It was helpful for me to be able to form my opinions about which person I was going to support. And I think that's what's critically missing in all this. This was an opportunity to be able to see and or hear us, depending on how you were viewing it, and get an idea on a lot of the very same issues we talked about here today that I think Montanans are very concerned about. So I think it's very unfortunate. The other thing is, I'll tell you, is that this debate is not something that you guys do irregularly. This is a debate that's set up. When I ran against Conrad and was in a very difficult primary, I knew about this debate in January of 2006, and we prepared for this debate starting in January of 2006. We didn't think we were going to win the primary, but we still prepared for this debate in January of 2006. So it's very, very important. I can tell you, as far as being challenged to 5 debates, in Montana, your word's your bond. If you tell somebody something, you live up to it. It's part of who we are. And to say, I'm going to be there, and then say, no, I'm not going to be there, that's that's a problem, and because it takes away from your credibility. And you know, I know he challenged me to five debates. The question is you know, you prepare and you work for these debates, and you change your schedule for these debates. Would I have been here in Whitefish if this debate wouldn't have been here? Probably not. I'd probably been in Butte, Ron. I'd have probably been somewhere in the state.
On my show.
Exactly right, on your show.
Peter.
So the question really becomes is, you know, I mean, so we schedule five debates, so we're really going to have five debates. Or 6 days before the debate or whatever it is, or we're going to say, well, no, we're off now. Yeah, I mean, I actually, driving over here yesterday, I said to Charlotte, I said, we still might have a debate. He might show up, you know. But the truth is that I think it's really unfortunate. This is a small state. Governor Schwinden always said that by the time you run statewide, you've either shook the hand of or looked the person, every person in the United States is going to vote for you or against you. And I think that's correct. And this would have been an opportunity for those folks who are out there working hard trying to make a living to be able to still do their job and be able to see us on TV or be able to listen to us on the radio. And I think it's too bad.
Well, on behalf of the Montana broadcasters, would you please tell your children thank you for sharing you with us on Father's Day and coming here to Whitefish and visiting with the broadcasters?
It is a pleasure. I can't thank you enough. This is going to be a very, very important election, as they all are. And I appreciate the broadcasters and what they have done here. And we look forward to letting people know who I am, and moving forward with an economy that will work for our kids and our grandkids, because I think that's why we serve. I mean, it's about the kids and the grandkids. You know, I'll just give you, Ron, a real quick story. When I was about 14 years old, I was in a grain bin with my dad, and we were trying to keep up with a 6-inch Mayrath auger shoveling wheat out of a bin, and I was working my butt off, and my dad was working my butt off, and we got out of the bin, and for some reason, my dad realized that this was a teaching moment. And because I was, you know, sweat pouring off my brow, and we were gassed. And he said, you know why I'm doing this, don't you, John? And I said, because we had to get the weed out of the bin. He said, no. He said, I'm doing this because I want you to have a better shot at success than I had. And that's exactly what these races are about. Who's going to offer our kids the best shot at success? Not certain kids, not specific kids, but all kids. And that's what's made this country great. It's the work that our forefathers all did in this room to make this place where we can have a good life. And we need to continue to keep that in mind. So thank you, Ron, and thank you to the broadcasters.
Thank you, Senator.